Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we're in the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. And our toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS, is brought to you by Geico. Great news, you can save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. So anyway, we were talking about it before, about like Serena Williams and everything. Do you remember that match, like when she did that to that umpire, and then what that did to that? Seriously, to that poor girl. I mean, honestly, she looked like she
taking her moment away.
I mean, it just, yeah,
that's exactly what she did.
That's exactly what she did. She absolutely destroyed that girl's day, right? Like, was that not that girl, the greatest moment of that girl's life? Her first slam, she wins the U.S. Open at the Arthur Ashe in New York, right? There is nothing bigger than that. I don't care what anybody says. The U.S. Open.
For an American tennis player, without question. I mean.
But would you say that.
I mean, Wimbledon is still the, you know, the top of the charts.
Oh, you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In the tennis world, it's Wimbledon.
Really?
No question.
Mafia, do you agree with that? Do you think that Wimbledon's bigger than the U.S. Open?
I think it depends on where you're from. I think, obviously, if you're from the U.S., you're going to be more inclined to go for U.S. Open. But, you know, we had. What was his name a couple of years ago that finally, you know, was the first British guy to win the Wimbledon again, and that was huge, you know.
Who was that? Andy Murray?
Yeah, when Andy Murray won it right before the Olympics, right? And that was like the greatest thing ever for him and his country.
Oh, I mean, to win Wimbledon.
Yeah, to win Wimbledon, I mean. But if you're, you know, Serena Williams or one of these, you know, American players, right. I think the U.S. Open is huge for you.
When you look at the four majors, like tennis is like, it's like golf. Like, you know how when you think of a golf major, what's the first one you
think
of?
The Masters.
Of course. When you think of a tennis major, Wimbledon's the first one you think of.
Is that right? Because I don't know. I don't know.
Put it this way. Either way, we could all agree
that
most of them, I mean, obviously a major's a major, but those two rank well above the French and Australians, like an afterthought compared to those two.
Well, I'll give you that. I don't know if I feel that
way. I think here in America, and especially being living in New York my whole life, obviously the U.S. Open is the. No, it's huge here because it's played here and it's the, you know, the American major. But if you're a tennis person or a big tennis fan, I think that Wimbledon is still, that's like the first.
I mean, the party at Wimbledon on that hill is something else. But the party in Flushing is crazy at that U.S. Open. It's like there's nothing like it. I've been to it. It's crazy there. It's pretty cool.
I'll say it this way then. I think internationally, worldwide, for a tennis fan, the first one they'll say is Wimbledon. I'm sure in the United States, the U.S. Open is.
I just wonder, though.
There's plenty of golf fans who feel the U.S. Open is you know, in America, that's it.
So going to Wimbledon in London is better than going to New York City, to that 2-week run in New York City. Because when they show the two of them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to figure it out because, like, when they play over there, it's all no offense to anybody. Tea and crumpets, all this other stuff. It's like breakfast at Wimbledon, all this other stuff.
It feels like a more prestigious.
It's like a very snooty thing. It's like this very stuck up, snooty. You have to wear white, all this other stuff. There's rules and such. But here, it's just this huge. You know, it's a who's who of famous people, right? It's like celebrities. And famous, and then, you know, what they wear every day has become a huge thing because at Wimbledon, you only wear white. And the U.S. Open, they show up with all their, you know, dressed to the nines, right? They wear the outrageous outfits at the U.S. Open, and they try to get made. And, you know, it's huge money and sponsors and everything else like that. I just wonder, I think that my guess is, seriously, that the U.S. Open's a bigger party. For the players, and it's just New York's more fun.
Bigger
going out
party, it's more fun. What's the more prestigious title?
Right.
I think it's Wimbledon.
Wimbledon is bigger than the U.S. Open, is what you're saying.
I'm saying if you were a professional tennis player and you went up and you were introducing yourself to somebody, like, this guy or this girl is a Wimbledon champion.
I wonder which one makes the most money.
I can check that.
I think that also will tell you something. I could be wrong because, you know, Rafa wins the French every year, what, 12 times now, something like that? But I wonder which one makes more money, the U.S. Open or the Wimbledon. My guess is the U.S. Open is more money. But don't they have something isn't it Wimbledon that women make the same as the men? Isn't it at Wimbledon where they do that? Which is what the players, that's what the women want. That's all they've ever wanted was to get equal pay for the tennis, and they've achieved that at Wimbledon. I don't think they've done that here, have they, at the U.S. Open? They don't make the same amount of money, do they? But, I mean, the purse for these tournaments is outrageous now. The money that they make is crazy. So 855-212-4227. What do you got, Carver High?
You get more money for winning the U.S. Open.
Is that right? Does it say how much money you're dealing with?
The men and the women singles winner gets $3.8
million. Oh, so
the U.S. Open.
So it's the same for men and women at the U.S. Open now, too?
Yes.
They both make the same amount of money? Well, yes. What more could you want? The soccer women should be playing tennis.
The winner of Wimbledon, men and women, $2.9 million this year.
$2.9 million. So that would appear to me that it'll never catch up to the other one. Because they'll just keep adding to it every year.
I think there's probably more money involved with it being in New York, and I don't know. I get there's more money involved. I still just think it's prestige. I'm not going to go and look at the golf. I mean, is the Masters, you get the most money for winning the Masters?
I don't know. I would agree with you that the Masters is the biggest one.
Like most prestigious.
But most prestigious, I'll give you that. But I think, you know, I like the British Open the best. I like Lynx golf the best.
But I think that...
With the weather and the rain and the wind and
everything. You would be in the minority in that.
Totally. Totally in the minority. Everyone loves the Masters.
In fact, I think that they would rank that third, obviously, because the fourth, I mean, the players, the PGA Championship, nobody cares about that.
They
care so little about it, they had to move it to May to make people care.
But now I think they do care about it. I think the U.S. Open and the Masters and the PGA are really all that matter.
Right.
The other one, no one cares about. But players do. The Euros, they love it.
Well, they care about the
Open Championship.
I personally put that, you know, right. It goes for me, Masters, U.S. Open, and then the Open. I don't care about the PGA Championship.
And you never cared about the PGA Championship?
Because it was in August. I didn't care. And this year I went to it. I mean, I was into it because it was at Bethpage.
But what was it like? Did you love it?
It was fun, yeah. I had a great time.
How much were the beers? Because at the Masters, it's cheap.
Well, the Masters is everything's cheap. I mean, it's you get, you know, one of those cheap.
The tickets aren't cheap, but the food is.
Tickets are not cheap, but the food is absolutely cheap. The beers were standard, I think. You know, $12 for a beer, whatever.
Nothing
it was.
Major. $12, that's a lot of money, right, for a beer?
Sporting events today, that's like the going rate.
What did you think today when you woke up and saw that, you know, if you're using like sexual enhancement pills now, that you'll fail PED tests?
Well, we've seen this in the NFL recently, too, with Golden Tate and a few other people. So I guess MLB's letting their players know. It's going to happen here, too.
Is that what Golden Tate complained about?
That's why he filed a grievance.
Didn't he say he was doing something with in vitro or something with babies?
Something like that, yeah.
That's crazy. Can you imagine how once they find that out, don't they? Like the players will start using that excuse?
Sure.
But will it fly? Will it hold water?
Apparently not.
There you go. I was looking at the NFL, the offensive. I sent you this thing today about, like, you know, the offensive landscape I saw on ESPN. Teams, if you remember, the offensive explosion of 2018, teams were scoring at a record pace because of passing attacks, highly efficient, and reimagine roles for running backs, whatever that means. I think that means that a lot of running backs are catching the ball underneath and they've become receivers now, which to me is, it's not something new. I just don't believe that for one minute. You're telling me that running backs have never caught the ball underneath in their career? Please.
They've caught the ball underneath, but I don't think
not like they do now.
The rate The amount of catches that these guys have now is nowhere near like it used to be.
So the 2018 breakthrough softened, they're saying, in the final 4 weeks of the season that everything kind of crashed. Anyway, they're talking about six of the league's seven new head coaches come from these huge offensive backgrounds. Their arrival raises the total of coaches who will carry, call their own plays to 17, an increase of 21% from 2018 as teams focus on offense from the top down. But they're saying that because of 2019 rule changes or points of emphasis favor the offense, and if you could actually make it more difficult to move the ball early in the regular season. They're saying shadows of 78 hovered over the majority of the 2018 season. It had been 40 years since the NFL had instituted illegal contact as a foul, prohibiting defenders from significant contact with receivers beyond 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. So, in 2018, the competition committee juiced the game once again, it says here, when it made illegal contact and rougher the passer points of emphasis for officials, resulting in a spike of both penalties during the first 5 weeks of the season. Remember they made all those calls to break them in and to let them know these are the rules. You touch them, you're going to get it. So there was a lot of those calls early. So both of these, you know, players adjusted by reducing contact with receivers and softening the pass rush. And then they didn't. Opponents were given free yards and extra first downs via penalties. Both outcomes aided offenses for the first 13 weeks of the season. So going into this season, there are two significant rule changes and 2 points of emphasis. None are expected to provide the boost that happened in 18. Reviewing pass interference will certainly change the game, if you ask me. I think it's just going to make it longer, and delays are just going to be painful. They've warned about the possibility of seeing and calling offensive pass interference on a review of a defensive penalty. According to a study by the NFL performed during the offseason, the most frequent penalty type among the 50 biggest non-calls of 2018 based on win probability was offensive pass interference. That was the most frequent penalty type. So, really, the most frequent penalty type among 50 biggest – oh, the most frequent non-call is offensive pass interference. So they never call it on the offensive guy, right? They call it on the defensive guy. And then the other major rule change is a prohibition of all blind side blocks. Now they've got an enforcement of the helmet rule, which prohibits players from lowering their heads to initiate contact with an opponent. So I was looking at some of the numbers. So they're talking about the explosions of offense in 2018, and now they're talking about what's going to happen, you know, in those last 4 weeks that everything started dropping off. There was increased comfort in spread concepts, more passing on first down, more three-receiver sets, the use of the running back in a passing game, and just better quarterbacks. They said that league-wide quarterback rating dropped from 85.9 in weeks 1 through 13 to 77.9, so it dropped off in the last few weeks. Do you think there's any truth or semblance to the fact that it's because, you know, in the last, I think from weeks 12 to 17, it's playoff time. It's crunch time. It's win at all cost time. It's you can't afford to lose today time. You got to win this game. It's a must win. There's absolutely no room for bending or breaking today. You've got to win this football game no matter what, dirty otherwise. You got to get it done today. You're not going to see them scoring as much. Remember they said Breeze started dropping off late in the season, so they started saying, oh, he's old. I think it's because defenses clamp down and teams clamp down when they're desperate and they have to win to get into the playoffs. They can't afford a loss. That's why those numbers drop off, if you ask me. 855-212-4227 is our number to get on the bench.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
So, Mafia, who do you think? I was looking at this story on college football rivalries, you know, the best ones. And who do you think is, just off the top of your head, is the best rivalry in college football?
Talking about them both being good, so it actually matters, or is it just like that they just hate each other?
Just the best rivalry.
I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of people are going to say Ohio State, Michigan, or that's probably one of the best ones going right now because they've both been good for a couple of years. They hate each other. although it's kind of been one-sided, as we've talked about over and over again, with Harbaugh not being able to beat Ohio State. But I think that's probably one of the best ones going at the moment.
So they actually rated that one number two. Who do you think it is, Carver High?
It's probably Alabama Auburn.
That was rated number four. The number one rated rivalry, according to those that know.
Army-Navy?
It's Army-Navy. But do you agree with that?
I just think that, well, look, you got to look at it from different levels. Are we talking about, you know, the oldest and most, you know, really the biggest rivalry? You know, that Army-Navy football game has been going on forever, and for those two teams, it's the only game
that
matters.
Is it not more of like a tradition? Is it a tradition? To me, it's I'm not going to deny it's a rivalry, but to me, it's a bigger tradition than it is a rivalry, because I cannot put that ahead of Michigan, Ohio State, or Oklahoma, Texas.
But you can't put it ahead of it because those games matter more? Is that why? Those games matter more.
Not only are they matter more, but they're better. They're just better.
Not only that, to me, a rivalry has to have some kind of real vitriol to it. You got to really like hate the other team and want like terrible things for them. You know, those two schools, those academies, obviously have a rivalry both
in
the military.
But they're in it
together. They're in it together. They really respect each other. As much as you want to beat the other team, it's not just, oh, we want to, you know, we want the bragging rights. You know, that's basically what it was like, hey, we won this year. Like, the other ones, you wish evil on the other school. That's a real rivalry to me. When you can't stand when the other team wins, it makes you sick.
It's like
not
life
like,
or death.
Oh, yeah, I just want to beat them this year.
So it goes Army-Navy, Michigan, Ohio State, then Oklahoma, Texas, the Red River, which I think is, I know how big it is to them, for sure, right? Like, I get it. But to me, that game, to be honest, has kind of left a little bit to be desired.
Right, it's been a beatdown for a long time.
Right, you know what I mean? It just hasn't had, like, Red River. They always sell you that game every year. Like, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I just don't think it is. That's just me.
But to those two schools, it does matter.
But to them, like, if I just said that now, all the people that go there hate me forever.
Right,
just saying it.
I think when you look at these rivalry games, it's you can't look at it the same way, because there's going to be years or there's going to be stretches where one or both teams maybe don't matter, you know?
I like it when they meet in the Big 12 championship like they did last year. That meant something.
That game matters. And the thing about Michigan-Ohio State is, for the most part, every year it matters. Auburn-Alabama for a long time has mattered every year.
Right.
For a good 10, 15 years now, it's really mattered.
What about Georgia-Florida?
You see, that's another one. That used to be the thing when Florida was so good. And now maybe it's going to pick back up. Both teams, of course, in the top 10 to start the season. It could be there again this year.
The world's largest cocktail party.
You know, we're not allowed to call it that anymore.
Is that right?
So, yeah, no, they've stripped all the branding of that.
Why is that?
Because they don't want it associated with drinking, cocktail party.
Wow, no longer officially used. They don't use it anymore? Well, I do. How's that
sound?
Yeah,
we do. We could still use it.
Who cares what they think? They have Ole Miss and Mississippi State here as number six. Like, no offense to anybody that goes there, but who gives a rat's ass?
But that's the thing. And this is why it's
hard. I'm saying
hard.
Everybody else, like, just in general, doesn't care.
For people that go to that school and the state of Mississippi, that game means more than anything. The Egg Bowl every year, that
right.
is it. That is what matters. Bottom line, Civil War, Oregon State.
Civil War.
Matters. Boom. Done.
Stanford. Stanford-Cal. Boom.
USC-UCLA.
Boom.
When they used to do the backyard brawl every year, right, until they got split up, Pitt and West Virginia. You know this being from the area.
Pitt-West Virginia's huge.
Does that game matter more? When they played every year, did anything else matter than that game?
I thought Pitt-Penn State and Pitt-West Virginia were, like, on par. I thought they were both huge.
It just took so long. Pitt and Penn State didn't play forever until recently.
Well, they played forever and then stopped doing it is what they did. Florida State-Miami is a great rivalry.
Sure.
I think that one's great. And then Notre Dame-USC.
That one is as well.
Harvard-Yale.
There you go. There's games like this that do matter to them.
Florida-Florida State. They had Pitt-West Virginia 12th. Texas and Texas A&M, 13th.
And they don't play anymore, which is unfortunate.
So that, yeah, the rivalry's been put on hold since 2011 due to the Aggies leaving the Big 12 for the SEC. USC, UCLA every year, Washington, Washington State, the Apple Cup, Michigan, Notre Dame. Aren't they ending this rivalry? Is that coming to an end?
It ended for a couple of years, and now last year and this year they've picked it back up.
But after they play this year, the series is going on hiatus again.
Yes, a couple of years, then they'll play home and home again.
Ugh. Michigan, Michigan State made the list. BYU, Utah. And then Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. This was on Yardbarker. Clemson and South Carolina. That's a great rivalry.
Great rivalry, but it's so far down now because Clemson beats them down every year.
Minnesota and Wisconsin, the Paul Bunyan axe is on the line. And then Iowa, Iowa State. They have, how about this one, Lafayette and Lehigh. DePaul and Wabash made the list, for Christ's sakes. And Indiana, Purdue, the old Oaken bucket. And that has been going on.
The only game on
forever.
Indiana's schedule that matters every year.
I want to get Rod on from Oregon. You're on CBS Sports Radio. Rod.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hey, buddy.
Can I get a triple shot of colon cleanse? Because I got one coming up.
Oh, he's going to have the Pharrellinoscopy, it looks like.
Oh, amen.
Have fun.
Anyway, can I get back to the majors? One of the really unique things about the Masters, it's played on the same course every year.
Right.
So people that watch it, they know what's coming up every hole. And the PPC, I think that's bigger than the PGA because it's the same thing. It's a more prestigious tournament. So,
you mean the Players' Championship? You're telling me is bigger than the PGA Championship? I don't believe that. I don't
believe bigger purse.
Maybe to the Players, there's more money on the line or something. But it's still, you know, sorry, it's not a major. People try to sell you that it is, but it isn't.
The Players could care about it more.
The Players care about the Players' Championship, and they also care about, obviously, I think, the Ryder Cup. That's it.
I love the Ryder Cup.
I love the Ryder Cup. But I don't the President's Cup and all this other stuff. In fact, I have a thing tonight I'm going to talk about that playoff they're in. And here's the deal. No one cares about that either.
And why should they with the – I mean, one guy – Thomas starting minus 10. The other guy's minus – like enough.
They're
like,
making up funny – for Rutherford scoring system here. They got the funny rules.
You've ruined it.
They've ruined
golf. They just can't
golf.
Figure out how to make that playoff
matter. So which one's your favorite, Rod?
It's a Masters.
Well, there you go. So a lot of people love the Masters. That's pretty obvious. But it is what it is. Like I said, I think they're all great, but I like the Open Championship. I love links golf and conditions when these guys get brought to their knees. There's nothing better. And there's also nothing better for me than watching them all cry when they play in, like, the U.S. Open every year and the rough's as deep as their shins and they all cry about the conditions. It's so funny to me when these guys that shoot 50 under par every week on the pro tour finally play a golf course and they're only one or two under and they're struggling and no one can make the cut and they're all crying and complaining. There's nothing better than when I see these guys, cry about the golf course. And they do it every time. If the course is tougher than they are, they always cry. The excuses come out like all day long every day. I don't care what any of them say. They do it. They whine like little pigs. They do. And I'm not even tripping. I'm right. There you go. I don't even want to discuss it. Don't even bring it up with me because you're not going to win the argument. They all cry whenever the course is too hard. They all complain about the conditions. It's so funny to me. But the real men show up for the Open Championship. They play in that. I mean, Christ, I'm surprised they don't play in snow. I mean, over there. It's so crazy, the weather. It makes golf impossible, which makes it kick ass. You know what I mean?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
All right, 855-212-4227. Jackson in Palm Desert, Cali. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Scotty?
Hey, Jackson.
First things first, you're never tripping. You tell like it is, and that's all that matters.
All right.
But I totally concur with you as far as the British Open or the Open as being golf's number one major.
Yeah, I just think it's, You know, for me, it's so much harder to play there, and those conditions are so brutal, and the courses are brutal. The deep bunker, pocket bunkers, you know, and then you bring the wind and rain into it, and the cold. And one day it's hot, the next day it's freezing. One day you're in a t-shirt, the next day you're wearing a jacket. It's insane. It's not just, you know, 4 days of the same thing, which, you know, to me, like the azaleas and the beautiful 75 degree weather at Augusta National. And, you know, for the most part, it seems like every time I blink, it's some beautiful sunny, you know, Saturday, Sunday at Augusta, right? And they have that beautiful spring weather down there in Atlanta. I live there. So it's always nice. And that's when it's the nicest in Atlanta in the spring. In the summer, it's hot as Haiti. But in the spring, it's nice. And so they play, and it's, like, perfect every day. And everybody, it's just perfect. And then in the summer, in August, they used to play the PGA. It was always stifling hot, right? And then, you know, the U.S. Open, you never know where you're going to be playing it. So that's different. But then you get the, you know, the deep rough, and the conditions are brutal. And it depends on, you know, who's running these tournaments, obviously, and where they play them. But the British Open is just automatic. It's just automatic. It does not matter, you know, where they play. They could have it anywhere. It could have been at Port Rush. It could have been at, you know, St. Andrews. It doesn't matter where they have it. It's always brutal. And the courses are brutal. The, you know, the ones that they use, the ones they choose to play on, the history of it, the traditions, it's incredible. And I got to be honest with you. Now, a lot of guys, the Americans have won over there. They've won the British Open. It's happened many times. But I think they know, in my opinion, the golfers know, all of them, that that's the hardest tournament. They don't want any part of it. they do not have fun going over there. And I don't believe they do in those conditions. And trying to win a major is very difficult there. Now, winning it is certainly gratifying and huge. It's a huge accomplishment to win it. You're the golfer of the year, blah, 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 over there. So it is huge. So they do want it. They all play in it. So no one, you know, runs the other way and hides. They all show up and play in it. But I think they know that going over there, what they're in store for is, you know, just problems. It's just brutal golf. I mean, it is absolutely, it'll chew you and spit you out. And then, you know, you see guys at the mercy of these courses, just absolutely buried in trouble, right? And there's nothing they can do about it. And they just get humiliated. And it is, there is nothing like it. I mean, you can't even compare it to the other ones. You know what I mean? Like, it's, to me, every week on tour, they play these tournaments, and these guys are dropping 15, 20, 25 under par. It's ridiculous. It's a joke. I mean, and half of these courses they play on regularly, right? They go back to the same courses all the time and play in these tournaments that they have, and the, you know, traditions and the setups are, you know, the same. They play at these courses that they're familiar with. And they get used to these golf courses, right? These guys know how to play these golf courses. They know all the shots. You know, same thing with Augusta. But I think Augusta is so hard. It's such a brutal golf course, right? It's so, the greens are hard. You know, it's very hard to putt there, and it's, you know, it'll make a man out of you for sure. But it's, you know, the weekly tournaments all over that they play on tour, that they play the same ones all over, you know, again and again and again every year. They go back to them. I just think it's too easy. Do you remember they used to play like at Firestone every year? They play at Riviera every year. These guys know these courses like the back of their hand. How many times do you think Tiger Woods has won at Torrey Pines and at the Pebble Beach? I mean, they played it 5 million times. They played Augusta 5 million times. You don't play Port Rush 5 million times. You go over there and it'll make you your B. I mean, it'll just... Those golf courses will just absolutely humble anyone. It doesn't matter how good you are. You go over there, you better be prepared to have a long day, because it'll tear you to shreds. That's why I think it's the best. I just think it's the conditions and the elements and the difficulty is, you know. You remember they always talk about the stimp meter, the stimp of the greens and everything? How do you measure the Open Championship? You know, just brute strength And absolute, like, these guys hitting out of this rough. Have you ever seen it? This fescue and all this craziness. I mean, it is absolute insanity. I don't even know how you describe that golf. It's so hard. I like just an average guy like you, me, Carver, I'd go over there, Mafia, play golf. We'd shoot a buck 20. I mean, just automatically, we'd have a horrible round. Without, I mean, you'd think you're going to go play the round of your life, and you're tripping. You're going to get spit out. If I went over there, like Haro's played all those courses. He's gone over there and played a bunch of them.
Shocking.
He's a good golfer, though. Like, I've played with him before. I've seen him shoot a 73.
You play golf 150 times a year, you're going to be good.
Well, yeah, he can shoot 73, 74. I've seen him do it.
I'm playing tomorrow for the first time all summer.
Oh, are you?
First time all summer. Going to feel like about a buck 10 out there with the humidity tomorrow, right?
Actually, I don't think it's going to be that bad tomorrow.
I think by the humidity is going to break a little bit while I'm out on the course.
No, I heard that it's actually, you're right.
But you got to remember something.
It's going to be 95 degrees. You're going to be brutal.
It's going to be awful.
Where are you playing? Somewhere in Long Island?
Yeah, my cousin's a member at a course, private course in South Shore.
Cousin Sean?
No.
A different cousin?
Yeah. I got a lot of Irish cousins, so.
So one of them's taking you golfing?
Yeah, every year, me and my other cousin Kevin, we get on them. When are we playing at the club? When are we playing at the club? So
tomorrow's the day.
Tomorrow's the day this summer.
And so what, you're playing golf all day and then coming here?
Teeing off at 2.
Oh. You'll be lucky. You know, that'll probably take you 5 hours.
Probably.
You're gonna hit the road and come straight here?
I'm gonna leave from there, yeah.
There you go. Well, so when do you play in your Carver High Open?
The Cape Cod Irish Open?
Yeah.
That's usually the weekend after Columbus Day.
And when is that? When is Columbus Day? Is that like in the fall, in October or something like that?
Correct. This year, the Cape Cod Irish Open is October 17th through the 19th.
So is
and
this?
And I might not actually, if I do go this year, I'm only playing Thursday and Friday. I can't play championship Saturday this year.
Why is that?
Saturday night, I'm doing the kickoff show for the Isle Seat podcast at the Offside Tavern that Saturday night, October 19th.
Oh, so October 19th is a big night now.
Big night. That's the kickoff show. Big party at the Offside Tavern.
But when do they?
I didn't want to do it that Saturday because of the tournament.
But what about, like, when do they open their season?
October 4th, but that's the first weekend road game where we can get a big crowd down there and do a show.
October 19th.
Yeah.
And what is the weekend? What is the weekend? What is that road trip game that they're playing?
Well, the Isles are in Columbus that night.
So, what was your opinion of Derek Brassard?
No problem. It's a low risk, no risk move. I mean, you're 1 year, $1.2 million. He wasn't great this year, obviously. That's why the Penguins shipped him out, and then Florida shipped him to Colorado. He wasn't great for anybody this year. He has history in New York. Played well for the Rangers in the playoffs. We know that. You know, he's a bottom six forward. Hopefully they catch a little lightning in a bottle and he plays well this year.
Did you see the story that I sent about, what was it, Pavlich?
Yeah, that's at the back there.
Did you see that?
It's one of the last two or three in the back.
Yeah, I got to find it here because I saw that. Oh, here it is. Mark Pavlich, former Ranger and Miracle on Ice player in the 80 Olympics. Charged in an attack on his neighbor, charged for assault, for allegedly beating a neighbor with a metal pole and breaking several of the man's bones. This is not funny in the slightest. I had some food come up in my throat there. The 61-year-old allegedly attacked his neighbor last week in the small Lake Superior community of Lutzen, Minnesota, after they returned from fishing. Pavlich told the cops he believed the man had spiked his beer, leading to the attack, allegedly. First responders found the neighbor in shock with obvious disfigurement of his leg. He had a bruised kidney, 2 cracked ribs, and a fractured vertebrae. Then they showed a mugshot of your boy Pavlich, charged with felony assault. Faces charges of second and third degree assault, possession of an illegal shotgun, and receiving a gun with an altered serial number. During a hearing in the court, the judge ordered a mental competency hearing for Pavlich, who did not have an attorney listed in online records as of today. Better get an attorney there, bro. Sounds like he's got some problems on his hands. He beat some guy with a pole into submission. Bruising kidneys, ribs, cracked, fractured vertebrae, and a mangled leg. He said he spiked his beer with what, I wonder? It's unbelievable. Mark Pavlich getting involved.
Anything can happen.
At 61, he's getting angry after a fishing expedition, apparently, allegedly.
61, huh?
He's 61 now. Played in the 80 Olympics for Herb Brooks.
Miracle on Ice.
Great movie, that movie.
That's a hell of a movie, right?
Kurt Russell did a nice job in that one, I thought.
He did. He was excellent.
I thought that was a pretty good movie at the end of the day when you think about it. So I got another hour to go. We're going to get into some of this, the best players ever, right? Choosing the NFL's greatest ever at each position. Do you know tomorrow night we have...
That always riles people up, right?
Yeah. 6 preseason games tomorrow night, Carver High. 6 of them.
Bills on Friday night in Detroit.
We got a little Bills game Friday night?
Yeah, they're on national TV, too. They're on CBS.
Oh, that game's on CBS while we're doing the show? It's all happening. Plus, we'll talk about the XFL in the next hour.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.